And good afternoon, it's Rod McClure back again. And we've got our Monday afternoon book reading, and of course we're going to be reading Nicholas Nickleby, and a very interesting book it's turned out to be. Humour, he's certainly serving it up to the school system, as you'll see in this coming episode. But before we do, a word from the people who helped to make our station possible.
Braidwood Community Bank, your local community bank supporting your local community. For friendly, helpful advice on general banking, investments, home loans, personal loans, retirement and superannuation and insurance, contact Braidwood Community Bank on 4842 1700.
And they're open 9:30 to 4:30 on weekdays. The branch will now be closed on Saturdays.
A proud sponsor of Braidwood FM.
Long-term Braidwood FM sponsor, Hockey's Braidwood, have a tilt tray that has a capability to carry 20-foot shipping containers and anything around 12.5 tonne. Hockey's can also supply you with bulk water deliveries, gravel, and they have a Kanga Mini for hire. You can phone the office on 4842 2286 or Stephen Hockey on 0429 422 286.
Holdfast Distillery is Braidwood's first distillery, located in the basement of Braidwood Hotel at 180 Wallace Street. Their products are made with Australian grain and are distilled in their specially designed still to produce clean and crisp products. They select the best botanicals grown in Australia or sourced from overseas, ensuring there is no compromise in their products. Call 0406 083 963 for opening hours. Holdfast Distillery, a sponsor of Braidwood FM 88.9.
Specialising in rural conveyancing and succession planning, Chamberlain's Law Firm are with you for all your legal needs. No matter how big or small, their lawyers can assist with a range of legal problems and advice. With offices in Braidwood, Canberra and Sydney, they have team members everywhere to assist you. Call Chamberlain's today on 6188 6200 or find them online at chamberlains.com.au to speak with their expert lawyers about your legal needs. Chamberlain's Law Firm, a sponsor of Braidwood FM 88.9.
And a big thank you to our sponsors who help us to make our station operate as well and effectively as it does. Well, we've been reading Nicholas Nickleby by Charles Dickens, and we're at the point where Ralph Nickleby has taken his nephew and is inclined to want to get him employment at a rather dodgy sounding school in Yorkshire. And the owner of the school, Mr. Squeers, is about to interview a man called Mr. Snawley, and you'll begin to see the nature of the school.
"I'm in the oil and colour way. My name is Snawley, sir," said the stranger. Squeers inclined his head as much as to say, "Oi, and a remarkably pretty name too." The stranger continued, "I've been thinking, Mr. Squeers, of placing my two boys at your school."
"Oh, it's not possible for me to say so, sir," replied Mr. Squeers, "but I don't think you could possibly do a better thing."
said the other. £20 per annum, I believe, Mr. Squeers."
"Or guineas," rejoined the schoolmaster with a persuasive smile.
Pounds for two, I think, Mr. Squeers," said Mr. Snawley solemnly.
I don't think it could be done, sir," replied Squeers, as if he had never considered the proposition before. "Now let me see. 4 fives is 20, double that, and deduct that, well, a pound either way shall not stand betwixt us. You must recommend me to your connection, sir, and make it up that way."
They're not great eaters," said Mr. Snawley.
"Oi, that doesn't matter at all," replied Squeers. "We don't consider the boys' appetites at our establishment." This was strictly true. They did not. "Every wholesome luxury, sir, that Yorkshire can afford," continued Squeers. "Every beautiful moral Mrs. Squeers can instil. Every, in short, every comfort of home that a boy could wish for. will be theirs, Mr. Snawley. I should wish their morals to be particularly attended to, said Mr. Snawley.
I am glad of that, sir, replied the schoolmaster, drawing himself up.
They've come to the right shop for morals, sir.
You are a moral man yourself, said Mr. Snawley.
I rather believe I am, sir, replied Squeers.
I have the satisfaction to know you are, sir, said Mr. Snawley. I asked one of your references, and he said you were pious.
Well, sir, I hope I am a little in that line, replied Squeers.
I hope I am also, rejoined the other. Could I say a few words with you in the next box?
Oh, by all means, replied Squeers with a grin.
My dears, will you speak to your new playfellow for a minute or two?
That is one of my boys, sir.
Belling, his name is. A Taunton boy, that, sir.
Is he indeed? Rejoined Mr. Snawley, looking at the poor little urchin as if he were some extraordinary natural curiosity.
He goes down with me tomorrow, sir, said Squeers.
That's his luggage, that is. He's sitting on it now.
Each boy is required to bring, sir, 2 suits of clothes, 6 shirts, 6 pair of stockings, 2 nightcaps, 2 pocket handkerchiefs, 2 pairs of shoes, 2 hats, oh, and a razor.
A razor? Exclaimed Snawley, as they walked into the next box.
What for?
Oh, to shave with, replied Squeers. There was not much in these 3 words, but there must have been something in the manner in which they were said to attract attention, for the schoolmaster and his companion looked steadily at each other for a few seconds, and then exchanged a very meaning smile. Snawley was a sleek, flat-nosed man, clad in sombre garments and long black gaiters, and bearing in his countenance an expression of much mortification and sanctity, so his smiling without any obvious reason was the more remarkable.
"Up to what age do you keep boys at your school, then?" he asked at length.
"Oh, just as long as their friends make the quarterly payments to my agent in town, or until such time as they run away," replied Squeers.
Let us understand each other.
I see. We may safely do so.
What are these boys? Natural children?
No, rejoined Snawley, meeting the gaze of the schoolmaster's one eye. They ain't.
I thought they might be, said Squeers coolly. We have a good many of them. That boy's one.
Him in the next box, said Snawley. Squeers nodded in the affirmative. His companion took another peep at the little boy on the trunk, and turning round again looked as if he were quite disappointed to see him so much like other boys, and said that he should hardly have thought it.
"He is," cried Spears. "But about these boys of yours, you wanted to speak to me."
"Yes," replied Snawley. "The fact is, I am not their father, Mr. Squeers. I'm only their father-in-law."
"Oh, is that it?" said the schoolmaster. "Oh, that explains it at once. I was wondering what the devil you were doing sending them to Yorkshire. Oh, I understand now.
You see, I've married the mother," pursued Snawley. "It's expensive keeping boys at home, and as she has a little money in her own right, I'm afraid—" Well, women are so very foolish, Mr. Squeers, that she might be led to squander it on them, which would be their ruin, you know.
I see, returned Squeers, throwing himself back in his chair and waving his hand.
And this, resumed Snawley, has made me anxious to put them to some school a good distance off where there are no holidays. None of those ill-judged coming home twice a year that unsettle children's minds so, and where they may rough it a little, you comprehend?
Oi, the payment's regular and no questions asked, said Squeers, nodding his head.
Oh, that's it, exactly, rejoined the other. A moral strictly attended to, though.
Oi, strictly, said Squeers.
Not too much writing home allowed, I suppose, said the father-in-law, hesitating.
Oi, none, no, oh, only a circular at Christmas to say they never were so happy, and hope they may never be sent for, rejoined Squeers. Oh, nothing could be better, said the father-in-law, rubbing his hands. I then, as we understand each other, said Squeers, will you allow me to ask you whether you consider me a highly virtuous, exemplary, and well-conducted man in private life, and whether as a person whose business it is to take charge of youths, you place the strongest confidence in my unimpeachable integrity, liberality, religious principles, and ability? Oh, I certainly do, replied the father-in-law, reciprocating the schoolmaster's grin. Then you won't object if I make you a reference then? Oh, not the least in the world. Oh, that's your sort, said Squeers, taking up a pen. Oh, this is doing business, and that's what I like. Having entered Mr. Snawley's address, the schoolmaster had next to perform the still more agreeable office of entering the receipt of the first quarter's payment in advance, which he had scarcely completed when another voice was heard inquiring for Mr. Squeers. Here he is, replied the schoolmaster. What is it? Only a matter of business, sir, said Ralph Nickleby, presenting himself, closely followed by Nicholas. There was an advertisement of yours in the papers this morning. Oi, there was, sir. This way, if you please, said Squeers, who had by this time got back to the box by the fireplace. Won't you be seated? Why, I think I will, replied Ralph. Suiting the action to the word, and placing his hat on the table before him. This is my nephew, sir, Mr. Nicholas Nickleby. How do you do, sir? Said Squeers. Nicholas bowed, said he was very well, and seemed very much astonished at the outward appearance of the proprietor of Dothby's Hall, as indeed he was. Perhaps you recollect me? Said Ralph, looking narrowly at the schoolmaster. Yeah, you paid me a small account at each of my half-yearly visits to town for some years, I think, sir, replied Squeers. I did, rejoined Ralph. For the parents of a boy named Dorker, who unfortunately died at Dothby's Hall, said Ralph, finishing the sentence. I remember it very well, sir, replied Squeers. Ah, Mrs. Squeers, sir, was as partial to that lad as if he had been her own. The attention, sir, that was bestowed upon that boy in his illness, dry toast and warm tea offered him every night and morning when he couldn't swallow anything, a candle in his bedroom on the very night he died, the best dictionary sent up for him to lay his head upon. I don't regret it, though. It is a pleasant thing to reflect that one did one's duty by him. Ralph smiled, as if he meant anything but smiling, and looked around at the stranger's present. "These are only some of the pupils of mine," said Wackford Squeers, pointing to the little boy on the trunk and the two little boys on the floor, who had been staring at each other without uttering a word, and writhing their bodies into most remarkable contortions, according to the custom of little boys when they first become acquainted. This gentleman, sir, is a parent who is kind enough to compliment me upon the course of education adopted at Dothby's Hall, which is situated, sir, at the delightful village of Dothboys, near Greta Bridge in Yorkshire, where youth are boarded, clothed, booked, washed, furnished with pocket money. Yes, yes, we know all that, sir, interrupted Ralph testily. It's in the advertisement. Oh, you're very right, sir, it is in the advertisement, replied Squeers. And in the matter of fact, besides, interrupted Mr. Snawley, I feel bound to assure you, sir, that I am proud to have this opportunity of assuring you that I consider Mr. Squeers a gentleman, highly virtuous, exemplary, well-conducted, and I make no doubt of it, sir, interrupted Ralph, checking the torrent of recommendation. No doubt of it at all. Suppose we come to business. We're all my heart, sir, rejoined Squeers. Never postpone business is the very first lesson we instil into our commercial pupils. Mr. Belling, my dear, always remember that, do you hear?
Yes, sir, repeated Master Belling.
He recollects what it is, does he?
said Ralph. Tell the gentleman, said Squeers.
Never,
repeated Master Belling.
Very good, said Squeers. Go on.
Never,
repeated Master Belling again.
Oh, very good indeed, said Squeers. Yes,
suggested Nicholas good-naturedly.
Perform business, said Master Belling. Never perform business.
Very well, sir, said Squeers, darting a withering look at the culprit. You and I will perform a little business on our private account by and by.
And just now, said Ralph, we had better transact our own, perhaps.
Oh, if you please, said Squeers.
Well, resumed Ralph, it's brief enough, soon broached, and I hope easily concluded. You have advertised for an able assistant, sir?
Or precisely so, said Squeers.
And you really want one?
Oh, certainly, answered Squeers.
Well, here he is, said Ralph. My nephew, Nicholas, hot from school, with everything he learnt there fermenting in his head and nothing fermenting in his pocket. He's just the man you want.
I am afraid, said Squeers, perplexed with such an application from a youth of Nicholas's figure. Oh, I'm afraid the young man won't suit me.
Oh, yes, he will, said Ralph. I know better. Don't be cast down, sir. You will be teaching all the young noblemen in Dothboys Hall in less than a week's time, unless this gentleman is more obstinate than I take him to be.
I fear, sir, said Nicholas, addressing Mr. Squeers, that you object to my youth and my not being a master of arts.
Oy, the absence of a college degree is an objection, replied Squeers, looking as grave as he could, and considerably puzzled no less by the contrast between the simplicity of the nephew and the worldly manner of the uncle than by the incomprehensible allusion to the young nobleman under his tuition.
Look here, sir, said Ralph. I'll put this matter in its true light in 2 seconds.
If you'll have the goodness, replied Squeers,
this is a boy, or a youth, or a lad, or a young man, or a hobbledehoy, or whatever you like to call him, of 18 or 19, or thereabouts, said Ralph.
Oy, that I see, observed the schoolmaster.
So do I, said Mr. Snorley, thinking it as well to back his new friend occasionally. His father is dead, he's wholly ignorant of the world, has no resources whatever, and wants something to do, said Ralph. I recommend him to this splendid establishment of yours as an opening which will lead to fortune if he turns it to proper account. Do you see that?
Oh, everybody must see that, replied Squeers,
half imitating the sneer with which the old gentleman was regarding his unconscious relative.
I do, of course, said Nicholas eagerly.
He does, of course, you observe, said Ralph in the same dry, hard manner. If any caprice of temper should induce him to cast aside this golden opportunity before he has brought it to perfection, I consider myself absolved from extending any assistance to his mother and sister. Look at him, and think of the use he may be to you in half a dozen ways. Now the question is whether, for some time to come at all events, he won't serve your purpose better than 20 of the kind of people you would get under ordinary circumstances. Isn't that a question for consideration?
Oh, yeah, yes, it is, said Squeers,
answering a nod of Ralph's head with a nod of his own.
Good, rejoined Ralph.
Let me have 2 words with you.
The 2 words were had apart, and in a couple of minutes, Mr. Wackford Squeers announced that Mr. Nicholas Nickleby was from that moment thoroughly nominated to and installed in the office of First Assistant Master at Dothboys Hall.
Your uncle's recommendation has done it, Mr. Nickleby, said Wackford Squeers.
Nicholas, overjoyed at his success, shook his uncle's hand warmly and could almost have worshipped Squeers upon the spot.
He's an odd-looking man, thought Nicholas. What of that? Porson was an odd-looking man, and so was Dr. Johnson. All these bookworms are.
At 8 o'clock in the morning, Mr. Nickleby, said Squeers, the coach starts. You must be here at 4:15, as we take these boys with us.
Certainly, sir, said Nicholas.
And your fare down I've paid, growled Ralph, so you'll have nothing to do but keep yourself warm.
Here was another instance of his uncle's generosity. Nicholas felt his unexpected kindness so much that he could scarcely find words to thank him. Indeed, he had not found half enough when they took leave of the schoolmaster and emerged from the Saracen's Head gateway.
"I shall be here in the morning to see you fairly off," said Ralph. "No skulking."
"Thank you, sir," replied Nicholas. I never shall forget this kindness."
"Take care that you don't," replied his uncle. "You had better go home now and pack up what you've got to pack. Do you think you could find your way to Golden Square first?"
"Certainly," said Nicholas. "I can easily inquire."
"Leave these papers with my clerk then," said Ralph, producing a small parcel, "and tell him to wait till I have come home."
Nicholas cheerfully undertook the errand, and bidding his worthy uncle as affectionate farewell, which that warm-hearted old gentleman acknowledged by a growl, hastened away to execute his commission. He found Golden Square in due course. Mr. Noggs, who had stepped out for a minute or so to the public house, was opening the door with a latchkey as he reached the steps.
"What's that?" inquired Noggs, pointing to the parcel.
Papers from my uncle," replied Nicholas, "and you're to have the goodness to wait till he comes home, if you please."
"Uncle?" cried Noggs.
"Mr. Nickleby," said Nicholas in explanation.
"Come in," said Newman.
Without another word, he led Nicholas into the passage, and thence into the official pantry at the end of it, where he thrust him into a chair, and mounting upon his high stool, sat with his arms hanging straight down by his sides, gazing fixedly upon him, as from a tower of observation.
"There's no answer," said Nicholas, laying the parcel on a table beside him.
Newman said nothing, but folding his arms and thrusting his head forward so as to obtain a nearer view of Nicholas's face, scanned his features closely.
"No answer," said Nicholas, speaking very loud, under the impression that Newman Noggs was deaf.
Newman placed his hands upon his knees, and without uttering a syllable, continued the same close scrutiny of his companion's face. This was not a very singular proceeding on the part of an utter stranger, and his appearance was so extremely peculiar that Nicholas, who had a sufficiently keen sense of the ridiculous, could not refrain from breaking into a smile as he inquired whether Mr. Noggs had any commands for him. Noggs shook his head and sighed, upon which Nicholas rose and, remarking that he required no rest, bade him good morning. It was a great exertion for Newman Noggs, and nobody knows to this day how he ever came to make it, the other party being wholly unknown to him. But he drew a long breath, and actually said out loud, without once stopping, that if the young gentleman did not object to tell, he should like to know what his uncle was going to do for him. Nicholas had not the least objection in the world, but on the contrary was rather pleased to have an opportunity to talk on the subject which occupied his thoughts. So he sat down again, and, his sanguine imagination warming as he spoke, entered into a fervent and glowing description of all the honours and advantages to be derived from his appointment at that seat of learning, Dotheboys Hall.
"But what's the matter? Are you ill?" said Nicholas, suddenly breaking off as his companion, after throwing himself into a variety of uncouth attitudes, thrust his hands under the stool and cracked his finger joints as if he were snapping all the bones in his hands. Newman Noggs made no reply, but went on shrugging his shoulders and cracking his finger joints, smiling horribly all the time and looking steadfastly at nothing out of the tops of his eyes in a most ghastly manner. At first Nicholas thought the mysterious man was in a fit, but on further consideration decided that he was in liquor, under which circumstances he deemed it prudent to make off at once. He looked back when he had got to the street door open. Newman Noggs was still indulging in that same extraordinary gesture, and the cracking of fingers sounded louder than ever.
Chapter 5. Nicholas starts for Yorkshire, of his leave-taking and his fellow travellers, and what befell them on the road. If tears dropped into a trunk were charms to preserve its owner from sorrow and misfortune, Nicholas Nickleby would have commenced his expedition under most happy auspices. There was so much to be done, and so little time to do it in,
so many kind words to be spoken, and such bitter pain in the hearts in which they rose to impede their utterance, that the little preparations for his journey were made mournfully indeed. 100 things, which the anxious care of his mother and sister deemed indispensable for his comfort, Nicholas insisted on leaving behind, as they might prove of some use or might be convertible into money if occasion required. 100 affectionate contests on such points as these took place on the sad night which preceded his departure, and as the termination of every angerless dispute brought them nearer and nearer to the close of their slight preparations, Kate grew busier and busier, and wept more silently. The box was packed at last, and then there came supper with some little delicacy provided for the occasion, and as a set-off against the expense of which Kate and her mother had feigned to dine when Nicholas was out. The poor lad nearly choked himself by attempting to partake of it, and almost suffocated himself in affecting a jest or two and forcing a melancholy laugh. Thus they lingered on till the hour of separating for night was long past, and then they found that they might as well have given vent to their real feelings before, for they could not suppress them, do what they would. So they let them have their way, and even that was a relief. Nicholas slept well till 6 next morning, dreamed of home or of what was home once, no matter which, for things that are changed or gone will come back as they used to be, thank God, in sleep, and rose quite brisk and gay. He wrote a few lines in pencil to say goodbye, which he was afraid to pronounce himself, and laying them with half his scanty stock of money at his sister's door, shouldered his box and crept softly down the stairs.
"Is that you, Hannah?"
cried a voice from Miss La Creevy's sitting room, whence shone the light of a feeble candle.
"It is I, Miss La Creevy," said Nicholas, putting down the box and looking in.
"Oh, bless us!" exclaimed Miss La Creevy, starting and putting her hand to her curl papers. "You're up very early, Mr. Nickleby."
"So are you," replied Nicholas.
"It's the fine arts that bring me out of bed, Mr. Nickleby," returned the lady. "I'm waiting for the light to carry out an idea."
Miss La Creevy had got up early to put a fancy nose into a miniature of an ugly little boy destined for his grandmother in the country, who was expected to bequeath him property if he was like the family.
"To carry out an idea," repeated Miss La Creevy, "and that's the great convenience of living in a thoroughfare like the Strand. When I want a nose or an eye, or for any particular sitter, I have only to look out of the window and wait until I get one."
"Does it take that long to get a nose now?" inquired Nicholas, smiling.
"Why, that depends in great measure on the pattern," replied Miss La Creevy.
"Snubs and Romans are plentiful enough, and there are flats of all sorts and sizes when there is a meeting at Exeter Hall, but perfect aquilines, oh, I'm sorry to say, they are scarce, and we generally use them for uniforms or public characters."
"Indeed," said Nicholas, "if I should meet with any in my travels, I'll endeavour to sketch them for you." "You don't mean to say you're really going all the way into Yorkshire this cold winter's weather, Mr. Nickleby?" said Miss La Creevy. "I heard something of it last night."
"Oh, I do indeed," replied Nicholas. "Needs must, you know, when somebody drives. Necessity is my driver, and that is the only another name for the same gentleman."
"Well, I am very sorry for it. That's all I can say," said Miss La Creevy, "as much on your mother and sister's account as on yours. Your sister is a very pretty young lady, Mr. Nickleby, and that is an additional reason why she should have somebody to protect her. I persuaded her to give me a sitting or two for the street door case. Ah, she'll make a sweet miniature."
As Miss La Creevy spoke, she held up an ivory countenance, intersected with very perceptible sky-blue veins, and regarded it with so much complacency that Nicholas quite envied her.
"If you ever have an opportunity of showing Kate some little kindness," said Nicholas, presenting his hand, "I think you will."
"Oh, depend upon that," said the good-natured miniature painter, "and God bless you, Mr. Nickleby, and I wish you well."
It was very little that Nicholas knew of the world, but he guessed enough about its ways to think that if he gave Miss La Creevy one little kiss, perhaps she might not be less kindly disposed towards those he was leaving behind. So he gave her 3 or 4 with a kind of jocose gallantry, and Miss La Creevy evinced no greater symptoms of displeasure than declaring
as she adjusted her yellow turban, that she had never heard of such a thing and couldn't have believed it possible. Having terminated the unexpected interview in a satisfactory manner, Nicholas hastily withdrew himself from the house. By the time he found a man to carry his box, it was only 7 o'clock, so he walked slowly on, a little in advance of the porter, and very probably with not half as light a heart in his breast as the man had, although he had no waistcoat to cover it with, and had evidently, from the appearance of his other garments, been spending the night in a stable and taking his breakfast at a pump. Regarding with no small curiosity and interest all the busy preparations for the coming day, which every street and almost every house displayed, and thinking now and then that it seemed rather hard that so many people, of all ranks and stations, could earn a livelihood in London, and that he should be compelled to journey, so, for in search of one, Nicholas speedily arrived at the Saracen's Head, Snow Hill. Having dismissed his attendant, and seen the box safely deposited in the coach office, he looked into the coffee room in search of Mr. Squeers. He found that learned gentleman sitting at breakfast with the three little boys, before noticed, and two others who had turned up by some lucky chance since the interview of the previous day, ranged in a row on the opposite seat. Mr. Squeers had before him a small measure of coffee, a plate of hot toast, and a cold round of beef. But he was at that moment intent on preparing breakfast for the little boys. "This is 2 pennyworth worth of milk, is it, waiter?" said Mr. Squeers, looking down into a large blue mug and slanting it greatly, so as to get an accurate view of the quantity of the liquid contained in it. "That's 2 pennyworth worth, sir," replied the waiter. "Oi, what a rare article milk is, to be sure, in London," said Mr. Squeers with a sigh. "Oh, just fill that mug up with lukewarm water, William, will you?" "To the very top, sir?" inquired the waiter. "Why, the milk will be drowned." "Never you mind that," replied Mr. Squeers. "Serve it right for being so dear. You ordered that thick bread and butter for 3, did you?" "Coming directly, sir." "You needn't hurry yourself," said Squeers. "We've plenty of time. Conquer your passions, boys, and don't be eager after victuals," as he uttered this moral precept, Mr. Squeers took a large bite out of the cold beef and recognised Nicholas.
"Oi, sit down, Mr. Nickleby," said Squeers. "Here we are, a-breakfasting, you see."
Nicholas did not see that anybody was breakfasting except Mr. Squeers, but he bowed with all becoming reverence and looked as cheerful as he could.
"Oh, that's some milk and water, is it, William?" said Squeers. "Very good. Don't forget the bread and butter presently."
At this fresh mention of bread and butter, the five little boys looked very eager and followed the waiter out with their eyes. Meanwhile, Mr. Squeers tasted the milk and water.
"Ah," said that gentleman, smacking his lips, "here's richness. Think of the many beggars and orphans in the streets that would be glad of this, little boys. A shocking thing hunger is, isn't it, Mr. Nickleby?"
"Very shocking, sir," said Nicholas.
"When I say number one," pursued Mr. Squeers, putting the mug before the children, "the boy on the left hand nearest the window may take a drink. And when I say number two, the boy next to him will go in, and so till we come to number 5, which is the last boy. Are you ready?"
"Yes, sir,"
cried all the little boys with great eagerness.
"Oh, yeah, that's right," said Squeers, calmly getting on with his breakfast. "Keep ready till I tell you to begin. Subdue your appetites, my dears, and you have conquered human nature. This is the way we inculcate strength of mind, Mr. Nickleby," said the schoolmaster, turning to Nicholas and speaking with his mouth very full of beef and toast.
Nicholas murmured something, he knew not what, in reply, and the little boys, dividing their gaze between the mug, the bread and butter, which had by this time arrived, and every morsel which Mr. Squeers took into his mouth, remained with strained eyes in torments of expectation.
"Oh, thank God for a good breakfast," said Mr. Squeers when he had finished. "Number one may take a drink."
Number one seized the mug ravenously and had just drunk enough to make up interesting moment to number 3, who had received it from number 2, and the process was repeated until the milk and water terminated with number 5.
"Oi, and now," said the schoolmaster, dividing the bread and butter for 3 into breakfast,
into as many portions as there were children. "You had better look sharp with your breakfast, for the horn will blow in a minute or two, and then every boy leaves off." Permission being thus given to fall to, the boys began to eat voraciously and in desperate haste, while the schoolmaster, who was in high humour after his meal, picked his teeth with a fork and looked smilingly on. In a very short time, the horn was heard. "Oi, I thought it wouldn't be long," said Squeers, jumping up and producing a little basket from under the seat. "Put what you haven't had time to eat in here, boys. You'll want on the road." Nicholas was considerably startled by these very economical arrangements, but he had no time to reflect upon them, for the little boys had to be got up to the top of the coach, and their boxes had to be brought out and put in, and Mr. Squeers' luggage was to be seen carefully deposited in the boot, and all these officers were in his department. He was in the full heat and bustle of concluding these operations when his uncle, Mr. Ralph Nickleby, accosted him.
"Oh, here you are, sir," said Ralph. "Here are your mother and sister, sir."
Where? Cried Nicholas, looking hastily around.
"Here," replied his uncle, "having too much money and nothing at all to do with it. They were paying a hackney coach as I came up, sir."
We were afraid of being late to see him before he went away from us," said Mrs. Nickleby, embracing her son, heedless of the unconcerned lookers-on in the coachyard.
"Very good, ma'am," replied Ralph. "You're the best judge, of course. I merely said that you were paying a hackney coach. I never pay a hackney coach, ma'am. I never hire one. I haven't been in a hackney coach of my own hiring for 30 years, and I hope I shan't be for 30 years more, if I live as long."
"I should never have forgiven myself if I had not seen him," said Mrs. Nickleby. "Poor dear boy, going away without his breakfast too, because he feared to distress us."
"Mighty fine, certainly," said Ralph with great testiness. "When I first went to business, ma'am, I took a penny loaf and halfpenny worth of milk for my breakfast as I walked to the city every morning. What do you say to that, ma'am? Breakfast, pah!"
"Now, Nickleby," said Squeers, coming up at the moment, buttoning his greatcoat, "I think you'd better get up behind. I'm afraid one of them boys might fall off, and there's £20 gone for a year."
"Dear Nicholas," whispered Kate, touching her brother's arm, "who is that vulgar man?"
"Eh?" growled Ralph, whose quick ears had caught the inquiry. "Do you wish to be introduced to Mr. Squeers, my dear?"
That schoolmaster? No, Uncle, no," replied Kate, shrinking back.
"I'm sure I heard you say as much, my dear," retorted Ralph in his cold, sarcastic manner. "Mr. Squeers, here's my niece, Nicholas's sister."
"Oi, very glad to make your acquaintance, miss," said Squeers, raising his hat an inch or two. "I wish Mrs. Squeers took gals, and we had you for a teacher. I don't know, though, whether she mightn't grow jealous if we had."
If the proprietor of Dothboys Hall could have known what was passing in his assistant's breast at that moment, he would have discovered with some surprise that he was as near to being soundly pummeled as he had ever been in his life. Kate Nickleby, having a quicker perception of her brother's emotions, led him gently aside and thus prevented Mr. Squeers from being impressed with the fact in a particularly disagreeable manner.
"My dear Nicholas," said the young lady, "who is this man? What kind of place can it be that you're going to?"
"I hardly know, Kate," replied Nicholas, pressing his sister's hand. "I suppose Yorkshire folks are rather rough and uncultivated, that's all."
"But this person," urged Kate, "is my employer or master or whatever the proper name may be," replied Nicholas quickly, "and I was an ass to take his coarseness ill. They are looking this way, and this time, it's time I was in my place. Bless you, love, and goodbye. Mother, look forward to our meeting again some day. Uncle, farewell. Thank you heartily for all you have done and all you mean to do. Quite ready, sir." With these hasty adieu, Nicholas mounted nimbly on his seat and waved his hand as gallantly as if his heart went with it.
And that's Nicholas Nickleby for this week. I'll be back next Monday with the next instalment of Nicholas Nickleby by Charles Dickens. I suspect, listeners, you're getting an idea that Dothby Hall is anything but a paradise. We'll see next week. Till then, keep well.